Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist. And we come to you live every Thursday from 7 to 8. And you know what we talk about. We talk about your business, the business, your money, your health care, your leadership, and the squeaky COVID that's getting everything that it needs, all the attention it needs. So we come to you, and we always have a great guest, someone who's an expert in their field, and we allow you to ask them some of the toughest questions so you can understand and have a much more intimate understanding of their specific area of expertise. And tonight will be no different. Before we introduce our guest, I have to introduce our co-host, Lori. Let them know you're here.
So hello, everybody. It's Lori Miller, LGC Interior Design. So excited to be back here for another Thursday night. And once again, I'm going to remind everyone that until June 10th, I'll be running fundraising for leukemia for Woman of the Year. So if you'd like to donate, every bit helps, $1 to $100 to $1,000. Maybe you have a business and you want to take out a journal ad and get your name known. It's go on LLS, Lori Miller, and you should be able to find me, or LGC Interiors, and you can find the link in the link tree. I didn't know what that was until recently. But, yeah, you can find the link in Linktree. So it's fundraising for a cause. It's the Man Woman of the Year Leukemia Lymphoma Society. And I'm a cancer survivor, so it's personal to me. So tonight's guest I am super excited about. I had actually met Dawn about 20 years ago, I think, but I'm not giving away my age. And Dawn is going to talk about mortgages, refinancing, buying buildings, interest rates, COVID, everything in between, and maybe her favorite restaurant or bar. So, Dawn, please introduce yourself, and thank you for joining us.
Hey, Ted and Lori. Oh, thank you for having me. I'm very excited about this and to see if I can answer any burning questions or just get some fundamental information out there and see what I can do to help in any possible way. And Lori, also thank you for everything you're doing for LLS. I know how
thank
close
you.
That is and how important it is, and I'm there to help as well.
Thank you. Perfect. We'll put you on the team. We'll talk about that later, and I'll sign you up. Thanks, Dawn. So, Dawn, before we start, I think this week I saw that you had gotten an achievement or an award.
Oh, that, yes. That was a bit of a surprise to me as well. Yeah, no, that was a bit of a surprise to me. They had sent that to me, and it was, it was one of the top originator of the year in the industry awards through the MBA, and it was quite an honor to get it. And you know, I just kind of keep my nose down and get through loans and help people buy houses and save money on refinancing. And somebody else was watching and keeping count. And it was really kind of nice to be appreciated and noticed. Thanks for mentioning
that.
Well,
that's awesome. Yeah, congratulations. So for those who don't know what an Originator Award is, I want to tell them, and then maybe we can start from there, right? Because that's a big thing.
Well, MBA is Mortgage Bankers Association, and they have a magazine as well, and they just kind of they look at different mortgage companies, different mortgage banks in itself, and their loan originators. That's the individual who kind of quote-unquote sells the mortgages for that company. Could be called a loan officer, a loan consultant, mortgage loan officer. We've got a whole bunch of different names. But basically what I do is I'll try to help individuals obtain financing, consult them through the application process, help them with any wrinkles that they might have, and just try to get it through. And what that award is for is really the amount of closings that I've done, the dollar amount of production, the unit amount of production, the type of loans that have gone through, my specialty is renovation financing. So it's a bit of a niche, and there's not a whole lot of loan originators, a small percentage, I should say, that specialize in that. So that's really kind of where they took notice on the amount of renovation loans that I had done and over the year, and I made kind of a top ranking. So, again, kind of a surprise. I wasn't trying for it, but it was nice to be recognized.
Well, listen, when you do what you're supposed to and you're really good at it and you really care, right, everything comes behind it.
That's for sure. I think the best I think the best thing that I receive, you know, every company, everybody's into all these surveys, right? Every company sends out a survey and how did we do and that kind of thing. And we're no different. We do send out surveys and we do, you know, really count on them because the federal government looks at them. Freddie Mac looks at them. FHA looks at, you know, and I've gotten a lot of really good surveys back too. And people actually take the time to write rather than just check off a 1 to 5. You know, they use those extra lines on there and actually write something nice about me. And that just makes me feel like I did my job well and helps me get a couple of hours sleep a night of good sleep when I do get some sleep and, you know, on to the next one. And what's even better than that is if they can refer, you know, a friend or family member because they liked what I did for them. And it's really the before and after that is very satisfying. It's rewarding.
Awesome.
So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
And we love having high performers on our show. So great to have a celebrity in the mortgage world, the university or universe of mortgages. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. I actually didn't.
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
So now, I guess, Dawn, if you could tell people a little bit, right, you started in, you know, doing mortgages, however, you know, long ago, and now it's like you're over the top, right? You're the award winner. You're out there. Everybody knows your name. I forgot what song. What was
are we at
that
Cheers?
Right.
Yeah,
Cheers.
I'm hanging out at Cheers.
Are we going
to,
yeah, we're hanging out at Cheers, right?
That's it, yeah. That's why I never passed the bar. I get it. Yeah. Yeah. No. I started back in, oh gosh, I think it's 1988, and I was a young little lass, and I got out of secretarial school, Catherine Gibbs, and I started answering the phones for this mortgage company, and it was just hustling and bustling, and I'm watching everybody running around, and we became a family really quick. And then in about 6 months, the company shut down. There was a hostile takeover. So my manager at the time, my boss, he hired me again for the next company. And for the 20 years subsequent to that, we were together. There was about 14 of us. I became a closing supervisor. I ran the closing department for about 3 years at a company called Sears Mortgage. Still tells you how long ago that was. And, you know, did wires and typed applications and filled in all the stuff the loan officers left out. And this was kind of in the wild, wild west days when they can charge all kinds of fees. And it was just insane. Money was all over the place. And rates were around 11 or 12 at the time, just to give you a kind of a perspective that, you know, 3.25 ain't so bad.
Right.
And then from there, I became a loan officer assistant, and I got a little closer to the sales, you know, bullpen there. And finally, I said to my manager, you know, I want to do this. They're making all this money, and I'm doing all their work. So he just told me that he was waiting 3 years to drop, you know, for me to ask him that, and he just drop-kicked me out in the field. I made every mistake there was. I learned from every one of them, and I only made them once, thank goodness, and I've been a loan officer ever since. I stuck with him for about 20 years, and then, you know, companies change and maneuver a little bit, so a lot of us kind of spread out and went our own ways. We've ended up together for short periods of time, and you know, people kind of move around, but we're all still very, very close. We have reunions all the time, and I'm so glad I learned so much from all of them and my mistakes. But I ended up here at Homebridge after many, many years, And I, during all that time, I kind of gravitated towards renovation financing, which is a bit of a niche, as I mentioned. And I had done it mainly because it was really not very popular. And there was one man in my office who was doing them. And I had gone over to him to ask him advice on one that kind of fell in my lap, because everybody just used to give them to Ron. Ron was the guy that did all the renovation stuff. And I just said, well, Ron, how do you do it? You know, and he either didn't know how to explain it or he didn't want me to understand it, because I didn't get it at all. So I took the book, which we had these large binder books. They were like 4 or 5 inch binders. And I just took it home and I read through it. And I just said, that's all there is? It's really not rocket science. So I started doing them. Ron left the company and I became the renovation expert. And really the only female doing it. So, you know, kind of like dare me and I'll do it kind of thing. But it was productive. It was a productive dare, and kind of dared myself to do it. And that's kind of how I fell into the renovation portion of it. And Lori, that's how I ended up at NARI as well. Where you and I had met all those years ago. So, yeah, that's kind of my history, my journey, where I've been. You know, I've never gotten out of the business, and I just keep learning. And especially now during COVID, as you mentioned, I was going to talk a little bit about that. The whole market has just really changed because of it. It's tightened up a lot. It's gotten a little bit harder. Rates have dropped, which is fantastic and advantageous for everybody. But guidelines have tightened up a bit. It got a little stricter again, especially for, you know, people who got laid off and lost their jobs. You know, we had to hold off on some things. We couldn't have – some people couldn't close. You know, I had one client who they were just about ready, and she thought she was going back to work. You know, she had a letter from her – the hotel that she worked for in the city, and she was a housekeeper in the city. She was making $75,000 a year being a housekeeper in the city at a hotel.
Wow.
I mean, no, it's no joke what kind of money these people were making and what they lost. You know, it's really, really sad. And another month went by, and they still didn't, and the hotel ended up closing. So she wasn't getting another job. She ended up getting another job in a totally different industry, and we, you know, moved forward, and we got that loan closed for her. But, you know, it was really sad. So there were a lot of things that tightened up because of COVID, but a lot of good things happened as well. But, again, ups and downs and peaks and valleys, it's a roller coaster, this whole business. So I've been through many different waves, and hopefully, you know, I've got the bumps and bruises to prove it, but hopefully also the experience to be able to help people during the next event that might happen in their lives.
Absolutely. So you said you do renovation loans. What is that?
A renovation loan is where if you're looking at a house to buy and the house is in really poor condition, you might think of it as like a handyman special, or the big quote now, the buzzword now is zombie house, right? About 9 years ago, it was a sandy house. Right, something that was, I don't know where all your listeners are, but if you're from Long Island, you'll know what Sandy is. That was a major hurricane we had in 2012, and the houses were just demolished. You know, with the foreclosure rate the way it is, there's a lot of empty houses and the zombie houses and things like that. So if you're looking at something like that, if the house is not habitable, if you can't go inside, turn the lights on, use the restroom and cook a frozen pizza, it's considered not habitable, okay? You cannot normally get a regular vanilla ice cream cone mortgage on a house that's not habitable, okay? So this, it might be a foreclosure, let's say, that's been vacant for a long time, and they've turned off things. The toilets are not working. Everything's winterized. They you know, don't want any people in there vandalizing. Sometimes people break in and they vandalize. They steal all the copper. Right, all the piping and the wiring gets stolen. Sometimes it's crazy the things that happen. So once the appraiser goes there, he's going to say this stuff has to be fixed before you can close. And the seller is saying, "I'm not doing a darn thing. That's it. I'm selling it as is." So then, you know, what's your answer? You have to pay cash. Mm-hmm. No, the answer, well, that's one answer, but the other answer is with a renovation loan. So with a renovation loan, what we'll do is we're going to lend the money to purchase the home, just like any other mortgage, but we're going to add to that same loan the money that you need to repair, fix up, renovate, whatever it is you need or want to do to that home. We'll add the money to that same mortgage. And we're going to make one big fat loan with it, and we're going to base that loan on the finished value of the house, not what it's being sold for or what it's worth now. Mm-hmm. It could be leaning over to the left. It doesn't matter. And then at the closing table, like kind of skip towards the end, what happens is we take that money. We're going to pay the seller off. They're going to hand the keys over and walk away with their money. And then the renovation money we're going to hold on to, and we will disperse to the contractor of whoever you choose, a little bit at a time as the work is being done. So the benefit to that is, one, if you have the money to buy a house but you don't have that extra money, it's the best location you found, but you don't have the pocket money to put into the home, there's the answer. There's the answer on you know, just buying something as is, okay, and being able to get a mortgage on it as is. Okay, I'll tell just a really, really quick story about it and kind of give you an example. I had a couple that came in. They have four tiny little kids, I think triplets and a baby or something. I remember these little kids. They came in. I pre-approved them before they were looking for a home, and we can talk about that in a bit. They found a house. It was a sandy house, and it was way out in the Five Towns, which is, you know, fairly
right.
expensive out there, and mm-hmm. it was a house where the water came in, went through, and just gutted the whole thing. And the couple who owned the house, they were an elderly couple, they got a check from FEMA, and they said, we're going to Florida. We're not even going to fix it up. Just sell it as is. It went on the market for $115,000. They put in $240,000 in renovations to get it back to speed. So mm-hmm. we put those two things together. Their down payment was less than $12,000. And by the time, what we do is we appraise it before it even closes. So we, based on the contractor's estimate, right, so we know what's going to happen, that house was worth $550,000 when it was finished. So these people put down less than $12,000, and they had over $200,000 of equity before they moved it. On their first Amazing. Home ever. Now, the funny part of that story is I went there with a bottle of wine for them to congratulate them and check out the finished house. And as I'm there, the dog is throwing up on the brand new carpeting in the corner. And two of the kids, one of the triplets, were hanging on the toilet paper rolls, breaking them off the wall. And I just wish them all the luck in the world. My job is finished. They needed that wine, and I wish them adieu. And since they've sent me a bunch of clients as well. And the contractor and I on that have worked together again as well. So it really made for a good story. But, you know, having all that equity when you first move in is really, I mean, it's a gift, you know, and that's a great, perfect world story, but it does happen similarly to that many, many times.
So, I guess another question, right? I'm full of questions tonight.
Please.
If someone wants to flip a house, would that work the same? Because they're really not, I mean, maybe you live in it for 2 months, but how would that work on flipping? And then
that's
what would
good
be,
question.
How do you get approved?
Okay, that's a very good question. So with flipping, it's kind of a dotted line, okay? So the answer is yes, we can do a renovation loan on an investment property as well. It does not have to be what we call owner-occupied or your primary residence. Okay, we can do it on an investment property as well. The criteria is a little stricter, okay? You have to put a little bit more down, and the interest rate is a bit higher because investment properties are considered a bit more of a risk for a lender than, say, an owner-occupied property, right? For example, if you have two homes, right, one your family is living in and one, you know, a tenant is living in, and you get into financial trouble and have to walk away from one of them, which one's it going to be? Right? It's not going to be the one where your kids are sleeping, right? So that's, therefore, you know, lies in a little bit more of a risk. So, yes, we can do renovation loans on investment properties. There is no prepayment penalty, especially in the state of New York. We're not allowed to charge prepayment penalties. And I'll only speak for New York also. It could be different in different states. And that kind of is the answer. I mean, if you're going to buy something and you don't want to use your own money to do it, you can use the bank's money to do it and hopefully get a profit on that. Okay. You really, and this is just between us guys, right? There's not anybody else listening to this, so I'll say, you know, you don't want to, I'm being sarcastic, I hope. You don't really want to advertise that you're going to be flipping the house, right? Okay. It's an investment property because the bank's not going to make any money on you if you don't make, you know, a few years worth of interest payments. So, you know, they can't say anything to you, you know, but it's something you don't want to. But then loan flipping too, I mean, if people do several a year, then there's other outlets. You know, you can go to a hard money guy and do something like that. A hard money guy, they're going to ask you very, very few questions. They expect to be paid off very, very soon, but they're going to charge you a whole lot. They're going to make all their money out because they know you're getting paid off. So it's an outlet as well. Very much an outlet as well, or just, you know, buying investment property to hold it and make it a rental. People want to buy and hold too, and right now in this market, buy and hold is really the way to go right now because the homes are going for so, you know, over asking, and it's a seller's market right now. To buy and sell, is there's not too much margin for profit right now. I'm sure there's a few of them out there, but it's really a buy and hold market at the moment. But yes, for investors, we can certainly do it as well.
Very interesting. Now, if somebody is interested, how do they get in touch with you?
To get in touch with me, my name is Dawn Cameron, and I'm with a company called Homebridge Financial Services. In this area, I've been told when I get a phone call out of the blue, I ask people how they found me. They said I Googled renovation financing or 203K financing, and my name came up. However, you can always reach me at my email, which is dawn.cameron@homebridge.com, or just call me direct at 631-760-3254. I'm never too busy for anybody, and if I don't pick up the phone, I always call back.
Awesome. So, Ted, I know I kept cutting you off, so I'm sure you have a few questions.
No, you're fine. Those were great questions. I was listening to you, Dawn, and saying you went into the industry in 88, and that was 1988. Wasn't that an interesting year for real estate? Wasn't that where a major decline happened in the prices of real estate?
It was. Again, it was. I was just getting into there, and back in '88, I was answering phones, so I wasn't paying too much attention to what was going on. You know, I wanted to get in there from 9 to 5 and learn that this was not a 9 to 5 business. I learned that very, very quickly. But yeah, I mean, it was the decline came in. You know, rates were up. I think they were about 12 and 13 about that time. I remember when they went to single digits, people were just, you know, doing cartwheels when it went below 10%. But the values of houses crashed a lot. Again, you know, the comparison, you know, at 12% interest rates, but a house was $85,000. So, but it's still, you know, it was still, you know, double or triple somebody's annual income. So it's all relative, but it definitely was a different world. Definitely was a different world.
And that's really what I wanted to get at. Like, you've been in this industry long enough to have seen, like, different worlds and, you know, maybe even the return of a world, and then it went away and came back. So you've seen that decline in prices in 88. You saw it in our meltdown in the earlier 2000s, and now it's going crazy again. So if I ask, and maybe it's irrelevant, but I'm going to ask anyway. So my question is, what do you need to obtain a loan these days, and has it changed a lot since you entered. And I understand in 88 you may not have been as focused on it, but has it changed a lot compared to now?
It's a good question. And actually, I was thinking of an answer to your first one, which included your second one. So the answer is yes and no, actually. The change is yes. I mean, immensely changed. So back in the late 80s, early 90s, okay, we had to check your income, right? We had to make sure that you made enough money. How did we check your income? We had to, you know, get all kinds of pay stubs. We had to talk to your employer. We needed your tax returns for, you know, several years. We had to check if you rented, right? If you were a renter, we had to check that. We needed 12 months of canceled checks for any loans that you might have, car loans, rental, student loans, anything like that, copying front and backs of checks, of canceled checks, right? Technology has changed things a whole lot, right? We don't have to do that anymore. I remember ordering credit reports. I would lick a stamp, handwrite an envelope with a request, and wait 2 weeks for that credit report to come back. I remember it. I can see myself doing it right now.
Wow.
I remember like clear as day. And when I was a loan opener, you know, and you wait for these. So the it took much, much longer. But ironically enough, nobody was pressuring you as much because they knew how long it took. Right? So
right. So
you skip over to today where I can run a credit report in, you know, 30 seconds on somebody and see their whole life, right? Everybody wants everything right away now, you know. So in that respect, it's been much, much different. But as far as the requirements, yes, it changed immensely. I mean, we had to verify everything. It took a long time to verify things. People, I remember people coming in, you know, nothing, there was no email. Right? You're lucky if you had a fax machine. And that, remember that old thermal paper? It's like the Dead Sea Scrolls, right? The fax paper. And if you, you know, left it in the sun, it would fade. You couldn't do anything. So, and carbon paper and things like that. I mean, just, gosh, it's funny just thinking about it. And people would come into the office to apply for their loan, and you knew you were going to sit down with them for probably two and a half hours, just going through the box of paper that they brought. Right, sticking out
of
the sides, and oh yeah, because they had to bring, you know, 12 months worth of bank statement. We had to go through all their canceled checks. Those were the days when you used to get your checks back in the mail from the bank, right? From like
right.
Chemical
you
bank,
to keep everything.
Right?
Oh my god, right?
In those days. So, that kind of stuff has changed. Now people, you know, within 2 minutes, I'll have what, 4 or 5 PDFs, and I've got everything I need and a credit report. So. You know, it was a little bit harder then. Then, you know, skip about 10, 15 years, then it started, the competition started getting there, right? Everybody became a mortgage broker. Everybody became a mortgage broker. Lawyers were mortgage brokers. Title companies were mortgage brokers. Builders became mortgage brokers. And I remember when I was for new construction, when I was a new construction manager for a while at one of the larger banks as well, and I was doing mostly new construction. And, you know, I was hobnobbing with all these builders, and they would send me their clients, and I would get the loans for them. And even new construction loans were different back then. And then all of a sudden, they got their broker's license. You know, this is, if you ever watched the movie The Big Short, it's very interesting. If you haven't seen it,
right,
you got to watch it. And, you know, and they were just, I wasn't being given any referrals anymore. And they said, well, you know, if you're going to get it, I need to get a little VIG. And the only way I could do that is to charge the customer. I didn't do that. I didn't do kickbacks. I didn't do VIGs. I wouldn't do it. So I lost their business, and then they lost their business. You know, everybody was a mortgage broker for there for a while. And then the meltdown happened, and a lot of people closed up. A lot of people got in trouble. That was kind of that was a whole nother wave. Even actually before the meltdown, there was a whole, you know, the FBI came in, and they would go into some mortgage companies, and they'd find blank W-2s and things like that. Never got involved in that either, thank goodness.
Wow.
I'm still here. But I knew of other people. You know, I had acquaintances from other companies and stuff that really got in trouble, got arrested and things like that. And, you know, they did a clean sweep. Then it got real hard again, right? Real hard.
Right.
And then right before the meltdown or right at the meltdown time, which is about 06, 07, it got real easy again all of a sudden. And it, you could just basically, we used to tease, if you could fog a mirror, you could get an approval. And, you know, no income check, and you go straight to closing. And it, and then that stopped. And then it got real hard again. And then, you know, then we had our most recent, you know, when 9/11 came around, that was another big thing that happened in all industries, including the mortgage industry and the whole anti-money laundering. Something came around called the CFPB, which is the Consumers Financial Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Sorry, it doesn't roll off the tongue. And they ended up taking over basically what the governments were, they were setting the rules for banks and how they loaned money. And the CFPB came in and they took over and changed the rules. And it was to protect the consumer. And it was a good thing they did it. It was a really good thing they did it. And so different disclosures came out, different, you know, and a lot of people got out of the business. You know, those contractors who were, or builders that were mortgage people and the, you know, the housewives and the, you know, people unemployed, all of a sudden they became mortgage bankers. They weren't mortgage bankers anymore. They were out of the business. And since then, it's had its gradual, the pendulum has been gradually moving over to the other side. So it's starting to loosen up a little bit, get a little bit creative, but I don't think we're ever going to see that time again. That's just my vision or my non-vision. I don't see that ever happening again. I don't think the country can handle it, especially after COVID.
Interesting.
Long-winded answer
to your question.
So you've seen
quite a journey you've had.
I've seen a lot of stuff happen. Yeah, I've seen a lot of stuff happen. I don't like the bad stuff. You have to learn from it, but I'm hoping, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, I've made every mistake there is, but I learn from other people's mistakes when it comes to that bad stuff. I don't intend on ever making them, you know, I'm a mom too, and I like my kids to be proud of me, and you know, they've both got a very good work ethic right now because they've seen how much I've busted my butt. They used to come to work with me. They'd come to my office, you know, and you know, the times I couldn't afford babysitters, you know, and they would come with me and play their Game Boys on the couch in the office and take naps in their strollers, whatever they needed to do. And, you know, they've taught me a lot, too. They go, look, Ma, gas prices went up. Does that mean rates went up, too? I'm like, wow, they really listen.
Oh, wow.
You know, and that's my total unscientific way of watching interest rates. If people don't want to watch the ticker and what the 10-year bond yield does and understand that, you know, rates follow the yield and are opposite of prices and all that, watch gas prices. That'll give you an indication what interest rates are probably doing. It's not a perfect science, but it's a good one. It's lasted me this long.
But it works pretty good.
It works pretty well, yeah. I have to say that.
Yes, it does. So what do you need to qualify?
Okay. Now, that's a good question. You know, based on everything I just said, well, you need to do more than fog a mirror these days to qualify. So one of the things that the CFPB did put out was that banks are legally required to show the ability to repay. Okay?
Okay.
That means income. You have to have an income. Now, are there no income check loans out there? Yes, there are. There's a small little portfolios out there, and you can still get them. But in general, if you're going for what I call the vanilla ice cream cone loan, okay? So you have to show that you've got enough income in order to repay the mortgage. You have to the monthly payment. So, you know, and somebody says, well, you know, I have $3 million in the bank and my credit's great. You know, I don't have a job, though. Well, then how are you going to pay the mortgage? But I have $3 million in the bank. Well, what if you put it all on red and the wheel comes up black? That $3 million is gone tomorrow. And we don't attach that money. So you have to have the ability to repay. You need to have some equity. In other words, skin in the game or down payment. Okay? And, yes, are there loans where there's no money down? If you're a veteran and served our country, thank you very much. And, yes, you have the opportunity to do that. There are very low payment products out there as well, but you do need to have a little skin in the game. Okay, so equity, down payment, closing costs, and credit, your credit score, mm-hmm. so important. Now, back in the day, one of the changes, actually, to refer back to that, is if you had 2 out of 3, most likely we could do something. It's not like that anymore. It's a perfect triangle, right? Those 3 points you really have to have. So that's really what you need, you know, to get a loan. You need income. You need a little bit of money. Now, that money could be a gift from your parents. It could be a 401k that you're borrowing against. But it's you have to put something down. And you need to have not a terrible credit score. You don't have to have an 800. Okay, you can have a 600, and we can still do something for you. But the higher your score, the better your interest rate's going to be.
Okay.
So, yeah, you need those 3 things. So you need a job, and you need a good loan officer to help you through it. You know, you want a reputable loan officer, somebody that's been through it, that knows you, that's real, you know, wanting to hold your hand and explain things to you. And sometimes it's not your time. Sometimes you're not ready yet. But, you know, it could take some time, you know, and time does heal a lot of wounds when it comes to credit and things like that. You know, sometimes you're not ready yet, but if you work on it, you know, 6 months or a year goes by as fast as this hour's going. You know, and you look back and you say, wow, I'm really glad I started. You know, I made that first step rather than getting discouraged and forgetting it and just renting for the rest of your life.
The specific question is, I think they used to call them no-doc loans when they didn't check your income. Is that what it's called?
A no-doc loan back in the day was no income, no asset. They didn't. All they did was run a credit report, and as long as you had the down payment, they would call them NINA as well. No income, no asset. A no-income check is when they didn't check your income, and they're out there. You can they have a couple of specialty products out there, and I have access to a couple specialty products out there too. You're not going to see 2.75% on those, like a regular, you know, 30-year fixed rate. You're probably going to see 4.25%, which is still not bad. But you have to have 25% down. So you still need to have some skin in the game with that stuff. You know, it's not you got to kind of be a little heavy on those other 2 points, right, rather than equally.
Right. Does that mean those are really designed for investors, that kind of loan?
Not necessarily. They're really designed for people who have money to put down, but I don't want to speak out of turn, but they were really designed for, like, self-employed people, okay? And those self-employed people out there, I love you all. But there's kind of a stigma with self-employed people. Hey, I live on the North Shore of Long Island. Half my friends are clammers, okay? And back in the day, you know, they would make a lot of money. If they made $100,000 a year, you know, it was great, but they'd only claim 12, right? So if we're going with a tax return, I can only use $12,000 a year. So your no-income check was really based towards that self-employed borrower, you know, who really can't show their tax returns, okay?
Right.
You know, because it shows $100,000 on that one line, and then you take all your deductions, you know, you can't be rewarded by not paying your taxes. So it was really kind of designed, you know, to kind of do that. But, again, they're going to pay more in interest rate because it's more risky, and they're going to have to put more down because the more you put down, the less likely you are to walk away from a house.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
See. Yeah. Oh, yes. I hear you.
Okay. All right.
You actually answered my next question. That's perfect. You already answered the next question.
I read your mind, Ted.
I hear
you. Another one of my talents.
So what's the minimum credit score you need? Well, what's the minimum credit score?
Minimum credit score overall, generally, I mean, we can go as low as a 580, credit score. Us personally. There are maybe some lenders that might be able to go down to a 550, but you're gonna pay a little bit more. You know, if you go below the 600 threshold, typically they're gonna want a little bit more down, kind of thing. And it depends why you're that low as well. Credit's a whole nother. I mean, we could do a whole nother hour on credit. You know. It's somebody's credit score could be low just because, you know, they're maxed out on everything. They've made their payments on time, but they're just maxed out on everything. And they have three new car loans, brand new student loan, and all their credit cards are maxed out. That's low credit score because they think of it as kind of like abusing the credit, even though you're making your payments on time.
Right. Right.
Okay, you don't have to have a bankruptcy and a foreclosure and a repossession in order to have a bad credit score. Those things aren't good either. Don't do them. I don't advise them at all. But if your score is low because of that stuff, it's a lot more likely that we can increase that score much faster than if it's a foreclosure, a bankruptcy, or a repossession kind of thing. Okay?
Okay. All right. What about veterans? Do you all make some special concessions? Do they get special treatment? I mean, you mentioned it before.
Okay, so yeah. So veterans, or what we call VA loans. Now, VA stands for the Veterans Administration. We love our veterans. I have my hand on my heart just thinking about it. My father was a veteran as well, and from the Korean War. Active duty, past duty, veterans loans, the biggest benefit for them is they do not have to put any money down. They can borrow 100% of the purchase price of a house. Credit score does not come into play. So there really is not a credit score for veterans. But they still have to verify their income. They still have to have the ability to repay. Just like
most other
people. What if they're
retired? If they're retired from the military and receive a pension or some pay.
That's considered income. Yeah, income can be considered all sorts of things. It can be your paycheck. It could be the business you own. It could be child support, alimony, pension, Social Security, disability, not unemployment, however, because that's not something permanent. It has to be something permanent.
Well, some people seem to think it is in this COVID, right? That's another story.
That's a whole other story, exactly. They don't want to go back to work, right?
Never.
Yeah, I don't even want to take us down that street. But
I know. I'll refrain. I have my own opinions on that. I'll keep them
to myself. No. I just had a conversation with someone who was saying that that's their problem in business because of that. So they said dishwashers are getting $17 an hour in restaurants because they have to pay them more than unemployment. So anyway.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's a real problem. Real life problem.
So speaking, and even those guys getting $17 an hour, they may start to get the itch to want to buy a home. They're making maybe more money than they've made. What about first-time home buyers? Are there special loans for them?
Another good question.
And how much do they have to put down?
Two very good questions. So, yes, there are a lot of programs out there for first-time home buyers. Okay? In New York, the most popular one is called Sunny Mae, and it stands for the State of New York Mortgage Agency. Every state has or what we call a bond loan. Each state has their own form of bond loan. Sunny Mae is ours, okay, here in New York. And basically with Sunny Mae, you could put down as little as 3%, so you still have to have some skin in the game, okay? That money can be a gift. So if you got a gift from Mom and Dad or Aunt Louie, right, you can still use it, but you still have to have a gift. However, they will also give you what they call a down payment assistance loan. So they'll give you up to 3% in a loan on top of it. That loan is a no-interest, no-payment loan. However, if you sell the house within the first 10 years, you will need to pay that loan back or a portion of. And as each year goes by, it gets less and less. It's like a sliding scale. Okay. So if you sell it in 1 year, you got to pay back almost the whole thing. If you sell it year nine, it's very little. Okay. And the same in between. Sunny Mae and the first time home buyer programs, you have to do a home buyer education. You have to go through a counseling education certificate program. Usually online these days, of course. These days it's online. It could be a little boring, but you know what? I'll tell you something. Everybody can go and get something out of it, whether you're a homeowner or not. Okay?
Right.
I think it's awesome. There are some income limits with the first-time home buyer programs. You can't make over a certain amount.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on the county where you are. Okay.
Huh.
So here on Long Island, you know, Nassau and Suffolk County and the five boroughs, it's the highest because it's so damn expensive to live here, right? We have to make more money just to afford to live here. So the minimum, or I should say the maximum, it's around $125,000. I mean, it's not, you know, pennies. But when you go further upstate or you go in different areas, more rural areas, it could be, you know, less. I've seen it as low as $45,000. There are sales price limits. Okay, it's about $600 is the max around here. You know, the house can't be more than that. You know, the recapture tax, I mentioned that. That's, you know, you have to pay part of it back. And then, you know, there's certain target areas that the houses need to be in. Okay, and that doesn't mean neighborhoods. They're very large target areas which can encompass a bunch of towns. And you can go on the Sunny Mae website, actually, and it gives you all that information. It is, you know, it's a publicly disclosed program. You can just state a New York mortgage agency, and you can see all the different things. They have the low interest rate program. They have the Achieve the Dream program, which is a little bit lower of an interest rate. And just to give you an example, those are at 3% right now. Okay. If you want the closing cost assistance program, it's 3 3/8%. No points on that. It's a good program. It really is. But
and
you're considered a first time. This is interesting little nugget. If you haven't had ownership in the last 3 years, you're considered a first time home buyer again.
Ooh.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So that's
pretty awesome.
Interesting. Right. But you can't be a co-signer on somebody else's loan. Oh, well, I'm on the deed to my dad's house. You're a homeowner, right? So it kind of cancels you out of it. So you got to kind of think about it a little bit. Some other lenders, they have first-time homebuyer programs out there too, some of the bigger banks. And each county has first-time homebuyer grants. Those are always good to look into in the area that you're looking into. They're temporary, and I can't really say which ones are which because, you know, let's say I live in the town of Huntington. And that town of Huntington may throw out, okay, we're going to do a first-time home buyer program. We're putting out $3 million to whoever, you know, first come, first serve. When it's used up, it's gone. So they can be out there for a while. They can be out there very quickly. It's always good to keep up. And now with technology and the Internet, you could probably get alerted every time one comes up if you really needed to.
Right.
You know, just get yourself on there or put filters to find them. But they're really, really good. I've seen people get, you know, up to $25,000, you know, as a grant, as a down payment. That can considerably lower your monthly payment. So there's a lot of good programs out there. Yep. And, you know.
I did. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, just make sure you check your local area, you know, your town hall. Or just Google it, and I'm sure something will come up. There's a lot of them. That, you know, there's some paperwork and some red tape you got to go through, but, hey, wouldn't you for, you know,
$20,000?
Absolutely.
Right. So I bought my first home in Washington, D.C., and they had a first-time home buyer. There were some similarities to what you said. But in addition to that I had 5 years tax exempt or property tax exemption.
Do they
do that in New York also?
Some places they do. You can't. It's not something you can expect. It's really something that you go, ooh, that's
okay.
Really nice. You can't. Sometimes I know in the Bronx they were doing it. Some places in Brooklyn they're doing it. in new developments. I know Staten Island was a big one. And I think since Sandy, Staten Island still has an abatement, even for the people whose homes were damaged and they remained in their homes and fixed them up. I think they gave them an abatement for 10 years to help them get back on their feet again. Yeah. Well, so what an abatement means just is that you're not really going to be charged property tax for a certain amount of time or a very little bit. That's what that's kind of the definition of an abatement. But if you can get that, that's awesome. Take full advantage.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. This is great information. I guess the ugly question for some people is, what if someone filed bankruptcy or they foreclosed in the past? Can they ever get another mortgage?
Okay. That's a really good question because some people think, oh, my gosh, I messed up so bad. You know, that's it. I'm never going to be able to do anything again. You know, and the answer to that could not be farther from the truth. Or I should say that can't be farther from the truth is basically what I'm saying. There are certain time limits. It depends on what kind of loan that you're getting. And just real broad strokes, I won't go into too much detail, but the major loans out there are Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, right? Those are two government agencies that supply money and buy them and insure them for banks. And then there's something called FHA, which is the Federal Housing Administration. They have their own set of rule books. Okay, and let's say foreclosure, for example, okay? If you're going to get a Fannie Mae loan, I refer to like my vanilla ice cream cone loan, right? It's a 7-year waiting list, okay, or waiting time, I should say.
Wow.
Okay, you got to wait 7 years from the time that you foreclose to the time you close on your new loan, okay? With FHA, it's a 4-year. Foreclosure is a big one. Bankruptcy is a 4-year for Fannie Mae, okay? And it depends also what chapter that you filed, like a Chapter 7, which is kind of the most common, it's 4 years, okay? So I have somebody, she was almost scared to talk to me the other day. She's like, I claim bankruptcy. It's almost 7 years. I know it stays on your credit report for this, and it's going to fall off and that kind of thing. And I said, listen, you're fine. It's 4 years for Chapter 7 or Chapter 11, okay? A pre-foreclosure, okay, it's 4 years or 2 years with extenuating circumstances. You know, if your spouse died and they were the prime, you know, money
right.
You know, brought in most of the money and things like that. They are still human beings that look at these loans. If you can show that there's an extenuating circumstance, you were ill, okay, and you were in the hospital for 3 years, right? You had some awful disease, and you weren't able to work, and things happen, you know, and unfortunately, they're going to ask you to prove it. But if that's the case, you know, they may make exceptions. Okay, so yeah, foreclosure, it's about 4 years, it's 7 years for foreclosure, 4 years for pre-foreclosure, bankruptcy is about 4 years. Now, another one that comes into play right now, short sale, right? A lot of people did short sales, meaning they sold the house for less than what they owed on it, right? Before now you don't see it so much because the values are higher, right? But when the values went down, a lot of short sales. That's at least 2 years too. Okay, so you do have a little bit of a waiting list. Now, there are some quirky programs out there that could be a little bit less, but those are like the stated incomes, right? You're going to pay a little bit more, and they're going to be a little bit stricter.
So we're about to run out of time. I want to ask you a question that might be relevant for, you know, in New York, especially New York City. There are lots of people who make high incomes, and what if they have no savings? Do you even work? Do you say come back when you have some money saved up? How do you deal with that?
Okay, so if you can afford the payment, but you don't have a whole lot, like most millennials these days, sorry guys, I'm not one of you. You're elder. I'm allowed to say that. So money can be derived from different sources. So a few of them just off the cuff is, like I mentioned, a gift from a relative, Okay, so if mom and dad or your brother or your cousin want to give you a gift and help you out with your first house, a gift of money is acceptable. They can, you can get as much as you want. If you get a really nice mom and dad or uncle or whatever, you can do that.
Send them over our way.
Exactly, right? If anybody needs an extra daughter, I'm here. 401ks, okay, is another source. So your 401k plan, you know, oh, I don't want to cash it in. Most 401k plans, and you have to check it, but most of them will allow you to cash in a portion of it for the without penalty for the purchase of your first home or a hardship.
Oh, no
right?
kidding.
But, or first home. Another okay. thing you could do with 401k is what I did is you can borrow against your 401k. So you're borrowing, you're paying yourself back with interest. We don't count that as a debt against you either because it's your own money. Okay, so that's a way. Saving, of course, is always the best way to do it. But there's something else, and I know we're running out of time, but there's something called a seller's concession also that may be able to get some money for you for your closing costs where your seller actually contributes a portion or all of your closing costs in the transaction of buying a house. So that might be able to help a little bit as well. Does that answer your
okay.
question somewhat?
Great. Yep. Great. Great advice. So, I mean, really good information here. And since we're technically just about out of time, how about you just tell people how they get a hold of you again?
Sure. Absolutely. And I'm more than happy to, you know, delve into any of the topics, or if you have one that we haven't covered, you know, if I don't have an answer for you, I'll find the answer for you. But you can always reach me. My phone number is 631-760-3254. That's 631-760-3254. My email is dawn.cameron@homebridge.com. I keep it simple. No Insta. No, you know, I do have a website, which is www.homebridge.com/Dawn Cameron. You can find me there as well. You can even apply for a pre-approval online. If you don't have time to call or if it's in the middle of the night, you can just go onto my website and get all kinds of information on there as well.
Oh, that's great.
Very
to
good.
Know. Wow, they can, yeah, wow.
Yeah.
And clearly yep. you're not a rookie, so.
No, not a rookie.
Sometimes I feel like it, but that's good. That's a good thing. You know, nobody knows everything. There's always people to ask. I'm always trying to help other people as well. You know, and during this whole COVID thing, they're changing the goalposts on us every couple of weeks too. So even sometimes the simplest question, I always want to make sure that I check it before I give an answer. You know, because you just never want to. I never want a client to tell me, you know, well, why didn't you tell me I could do that? Or why didn't you tell me that? You know, sometimes I'll give a little too much information just to make sure that there's not a question they don't know to answer or to ask me, rather.
Right.
You know, and so I can make sure that they are very well educated. It's a really big deal buying a house. You know, it's a bigger deal to buy a house and do work on it. So, you know, even though I do this every day, you know, you guys don't. So you got to be in the driver's
right.
seat, and I'm just your co-pilot, you know. And I just want to make sure
right.
that I help you navigate through it, and it's your decision, and you're not at anybody's mercy. And you just know once you sign those documents at the closing table, you know that you're happy you did, and it's an investment. And real estate is the best investment you can ever do. It always will be. It's got its ups and downs. But over time, it's the best investment anybody can ever do. So I encourage anybody, as young as you can be, to start at least getting educated and saving that money and keeping your credit really, really good as much as you can. And,
right.
Great.
And invest in real estate.
Great last words.
Yep. You'll
just,
create an empire.
What's the
Dawn,
youngest you
I can
be
thank
to buy
you
a
enough.
Home?
You have to be 18 to sign a contract.
Okay.
To legally sign a contract, you got to be 18. But I mean, I have a 22-year-old borrower right now in process.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yep, her and her sister.
Very cool.
So yeah, you're never too
Thanks
young.
Thanks a lot, Dawn.
All right. Well, thank you,
thank
guys.
You
I appreciate
so much.
The opportunity, and whatever I can do to help anybody, please feel free. Again, I'm never too busy for you.
Thank you again. And everyone, before we close out, don't forget donation for Leukemia Lymphoma Society, Lori Miller, MWOY, Team Blue Angels. So our team is rocking it and killing it. Thank you, everybody. Dawn, thank you again, and have a good night, everyone. See you next week.
Good night. Thank you.
Take care.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.